of this program.
Welcome to Shooter's Corner, your program for conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
All right, welcome, listeners. It's currently 14 degrees, at least that's what the car said, as we are driving in today. And it's snowy, and it's still snowing, and it's been snowing its butt off.
For 48 hours, it's been snowy.
It feels like it, right?
Yeah,
like I saw a little bit of blue sky out there earlier, but I don't know what's going on. But nonetheless, do us a favor. Drive with your freaking headlights on, for the love of God. And then if you stop somewhere, like, and you have the opportunity, brush off your taillights. Like,
yeah, especially if you have a white car and then your taillights are whited out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
then
can't
see. Then you just blend in. You're like the abominable snow driver driving around in a car.
Yeah. If you're listening too, if someone flashes their lights at you, assume that your lights are off. I flashed my lights probably three times in the last week. All three times I got flipped off, and it was just because I was telling them, hey, your lights are off and you're driving a white car.
Maybe you need to dye your hair.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Or it also means there may be a move.
It's the mullet.
On the road.
It's the mullet.
It's
thing.
The mullet, yeah.
They don't care about the light thing. They're just flipping off the dude.
Get out of here.
Driving an old Toyota with a mullet.
And I can't believe how many people don't realize there's a line or...
Was a line. In the summertime, there's a line.
Yeah. There was a line. But come on, common sense is you don't drive coming face forward at us.
Oh, yeah. I had a lady the other day. I was driving down in my lane towards me. Like, it was my fault or something. It's like, no, we're not in Great Britain. Like,
no.
You know, grab a grip on yourself there, Austin.
Is that our complaint besides the snow and the driving today?
Yeah, pretty much. But if you have any questions, comments, or complaints, feel free to please call in at 458-TALK. That's 907-458-8255. You can also live stream the show at all times by going to kfarradio.com. Click on that big orange ball that says Listen Live. And remember, you can also use the app. There's one for the Android, which nobody uses. And then there's one for the iPhone. So there's that. Matt's running the board for us today. Thank baby Jesus for that.
Thank you, Matt.
Of course, I'm here.
All right. Start the show. Well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Yeah. Slowly losing that. Thank you, Virginia, the birthplace of our freedom. Right? The Alaska Outdoor Mentorship Program will be March 12th. That's per the TVSA calendar. So if you're listening, Mike, and if that's changed, please let me know. That'll be from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the TVSA range for you military. That's 1730 to 1900. That's at 1230 TVSA Way. Didn't post what the topic was, but I'm sure Mike will let me know by next show what the topic is for that one. Last one was for predator hunting. There was a turnout, but not a turnout that we needed to have. I hope people didn't think that I was serious about it was about hunting the alien predator. And not the four-legged type. So
I would have showed up either way. Either way is a cool,
up for the alien predator one, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I would imagine a movie was shown, you know, a play-by-play, and then, you know,
well, it is a documentary.
Exactly, absolutely.
So TVSA will be having its spring 2026 gun show on April 18th and 19th in 2026. Showtimes will be from 10 to 5 on the 18th and 11 to 4 on the 19th. That'll be a Sunday, so that won't interfere with baby Jesus time.
Nope.
Admission is $5 per adult and $4 for active military. They're still looking for vendors for that show, so if you want more information, please contact Amelia Dell. That's Amelia as in Amelia the pilot. Dell, the gun show coordinator. Price of a table is only $75. You can get all the show information and contact info for Amelia at tvsa.us/gunshows. All right.
You know, if you have something new you're inventing, and that may be a time to go set up a table and, you know, like a duck call or something to deal with guns. And
how did you get to a duck call?
Well, because quite a few people are trying to invent their own duck calls, and it's shooting.
Fair enough. Public shooting hours over at TVSA are Thursday from 6 to 8. That's 1,800 to 2,200 hours. Cost is $5 for members, $20 for non-members. It's a great range and good people and under new management. So last but not least, the Act of Self-Protection Summit, Skills Summit, will be here in June 20th and 21st. That's being taught by Neil Widener and Chris Bean. They're from the Act of Self-Protection team out of the lower 48. They're great instructors, worked with them during the Active Self-Protection Instructor Development course. Go to our website. It'll give you a link that will take you directly to ActiveSelfProtection.com so you can sign up for that class. That'll be awesome. I get it. It's on the summer solstice, but yeah. What else is there better to do but shoot guns when the sun's still out at midnight? I can't think of another thing. ACHP class for C4, our next class is this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. So it's just a little bit of time on your Saturday there and then a little bit of time on your Sunday. So we split it up over 2 days, make it easier. So if you still have to give out a Valentine's Day gift because you sucked at the one that you gave on the 14th, sign up a loved one for this. It'll be fun. But let's get through this week at firearms history real quick. February 14th, Valentine's Day in 1854, a patent for repeating rifle firearm was granted to Horace Smith and Daniel Wesson. They received a U.S. patent for an improvement in firearms. This patent described a lever-action repeating pistol.
Did you say lever or lover?
Well, it was on Valentine's Day, so it could be lover, but maybe the government in their infinite wisdom changed it to lever action.
Lover, okay. Lever?
Lever, lover action.
All righty.
LLR. It's used as self-contained metallic cartridges, specifically the rocket ball ammunition. When we come back from the break, we'll talk specifically about the rocket ball ammunition, which is interesting. It was a foundational design for repeating mechanisms, addressing issues with loading and firing multiple shots without reloading after each round. Although the pistol faced commercial challenges due to underpowered ammunition, it led to the formation of the Volcanic Repeating Arms Company in 1855, which evolved into Winchester Repeating Arms. This innovation marked an early step toward modern magazine-fed repeating firearms, influencing later rifles and pistols. And also, on February 14, 1911, patent for the Colt 1911 pistol designed by John Moses Browning was granted the U.S. patent number 984,519 for the semi-automatic pistol designed, titled firearm. That's all. That's all the
It's as simple as it should be.
Yeah.
Firearm.
This patent outlined a short recoil operated handgun with a tilting barrel, single action trigger, and a 45 ACP cartridge capability. The design was adopted by the U.S. military as the M1911, serving as the single standard for 70 years, from 1911 to 1985. It emphasized reliability, stopping power, and ease of disassembly, setting standards for modern semi-automatic pistols. Development began in the late 1890s with earlier related patents filed in 1897, but this 1911 patent finalized the iconic feature still used in 1911-style handguns today. Yeah, we can thank John Browning for that.
You know what else is this week in firearms history?
Well, go ahead.
So do you know what today is?
Today is the 19th of February, so...
So outside of my birthday being today...
is it your birthday?
It is.
Well, happy birthday,
thank
Matt.
You.
Congratulations, young one.
Thank you. I'm not even 30 still. so today, 1945, is when the United States Marine Corps invaded Iwo Jima. On the 21st is when the first flag raising on Iwo Jima took place. And on the 23rd is when the official photo and re-flag raising of the American flag was raised on Iwo Jima. I always love that little bit of history that we had to raise it twice because someone wanted a picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat.
Iwo Jima.
You gonna write a song?
What?
You gonna write a song?
No.
Pretty sure there's a lot written about it already.
Yeah. Well, let's go into our first break. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about this rocketball ammunition because this is kind of interesting design and concept that they had. And then we'll get into my editorial for this week. Yeah. All right. We'll be right back after this break here at Shooter's Corner with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska, 97.5, 660 AM. We'll be right back after this break.
Explore winter trails you never thought possible. Stand, float, walk on snow with better traction and stability than walking down the street. Modern snowshoes are the perfection of a thousand-year-old idea. They're lightweight and versatile, easy and fun to use for all ages. If you can walk, you can snowshoe. Get the exercise you crave. Let it snow. Go explore. Start today. No lift ticket required. But first, find the right style and the right fit at Frontier Outfitters. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Be it work or play, your truck bed will take a beating. You need to protect your investment with an Arctic Spray-On Bedliner from Auto Trim Design. This Arctic Spray-On Bedliner was developed as a commercial coating for use on the Alaska pipeline, which is constantly exposed to our extreme Arctic conditions. Why should you settle for anything sub-quality? Get your Arctic Spray-On Bedliner today at Auto Trim Design. And as Ben says, we'll be here when the other guys are gone.
Customized by Auto Trim Design.
Hey North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family-owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. Prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV in North Pole.
KFAR weather.
A winter storm warning continues until 7 a.m. Friday. Cloudy tonight with a chance for snow. Lows around 2 above. Southwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Snow likely tomorrow. Highs level off around 9 above. Cloudy skies. 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight through tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. Did you, like, mute me or something? Or, like, what's up?
No, I just turned it on and it came right back down. Good transition.
Yeah, awesome. Great job. I had to put my readers back on there. I was like, eh. Just a little mental breakdown. All right. When we left, we were talking about some of the things about firearm history because of February 14th. There were some significant design patents that were granted. But one of the things that I was interested about was that rocket ball, because they like literally, it's pretty cool. Innovative early form of a self-contained ammunition invented by American mechanic Walter Hunt in 1848. It consisted of a lead bullet with a hollow base that contained a black powder propellant charge sealed at the rear by a cork or thin metal disc with a small ignition hole. This design eliminated the need for separate paper cartridges or external powder, making it one of the first attempts at caseless or integrated metallic cartridges in firearm history. Did you hear about this before?
Yeah, actually I have. I remember the biggest firearm that really took sort of this design was the H&K G11. I don't know how much you may know about that. It was late 80s, early 90s, next-gen service weapon
trials.
That's
when the Army was trying to transition to just basic caseless ammunition.
And then SHOT Show this year, two companies had similar designs. So one of them had that identical rocket ball ammunition type. And then there was another one that was, the powder wasn't in the projectile itself. It was actually stored in the stock. It was a very small PDW size, and it would trap a certain amount of powder and ignite it and send just rounds out on their own. But they mentioned about this cartridge design. That was kind of what gave them the idea to go that route.
I've always had the mindset that nobody really invents anything. They'll just reinvent something that somebody else has invented in the past.
Yeah.
You can improve definitely on the design. Yeah. And that sounds like what they are doing as well. Remember the Army was talking one point about having like a caseless, because the whole powder case would burn.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, they were talking about
that. Well, and that was the initial idea. So they did that years ago, too, with a SAW variant. And then recently with the M250 and the M5 or M7, the idea was that they would have a stainless or, a steel quarter inch where your primer would be housed, and the rest of it was supposed to be plastic so it could burn or at least biodegrade, and obviously not reloadable, cost less, whatever, but they can never actually get it to work correctly. But I think it's still, if someone could figure it out and get the science down and keep costs well, I think that'd be a really cool idea.
Well, what this ended up doing was, unlike the modern cartridges, it had no brass case. The bullet itself housed everything except the primer, which was ignited externally via a percussion cap or a priming pill from the firearm's mechanism. So you could probably integrate this somehow into a regular rifle or whatever. But
yeah.
Here's the problem, though. The bullet had to be caved out enough, right, to contain that amount of powder, which meant that a 100-grain lead bullet propelled by only 6.5 grains of black powder. Now, I get what you're saying, though. If I had a modern manufacturer using smokeless now,
yeah,
6.5 grains of smokeless powder is significant,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But 6.5 grains of black powder,
not
so,
so much.
Significant.
Yeah.
So it really only propelled that 100-grain lead bullet 260 feet per second. That's less than a BB gun nowadays.
I had airsoft guns that, like, you could go to an airsoft field and the minimum requirement was 300 FPS for these things. And they were breaking skin, but I can't imagine a heavy bullet trying
100
to go.
Grains really isn't that big. I mean, think about the standard 9mm for practice is like 115 grains.
That'd be like a paintball, though, because, I mean, these BBs, they're only, I think, like 24 grams at most. And they were breaking skin. I can't imagine something with more surface area going slower would do a whole bunch.
Yeah. So they primarily produced these in 31 and 41 caliber. So cartridge number one was a 31 caliber. Cartridge number two was the 41 caliber. So the 41 caliber was the only one that had the 100 grain bullet with 6.5, 260 feet per second. And it says commonly in the notes, extremely underpowered even for the mid-19th century with limited range and stopping power. Yeah, it would literally have to be a contact shot to the skull.
Yeah,
like
to the temple, either that or your eyeball.
Yeah,
like I don't understand. Like, yeah, there's no range to that thing, for sure. Even if it did, like your ballistic pant armor would back then would be a heavy flannel shirt.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it would stop it.
Yeah, it was sold in 10 boxes of 200 rounds, priced at $10 per thousand for 31 caliber and $12 per thousand for a 41 caliber. It was manufactured by Crittenden and Tibbles, which later became Union Metallic Cartridge Company, which is now still around today.
It is.
Yeah. All right, we got a caller.
That is.
And did they hang up?
I think they just did.
That's okay.
Oh, they are calling online too now. That works.
Yeah, perfect. Mm-hmm. All right, Matt's still trying to figure this out.
Caller, you should be on. You hear us here?
I am on.
Awesome. All right, hey, caller. We've got Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here. Go ahead. What you got?
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, hey, happy birthday. He didn't even remember it was his birthday.
I do forget.
Hey, you got birthdays with two other kind of interesting folks. Butch Weidig, who developed Kreptic here in Fairbanks. It's his birthday today. And Phil Shoemaker, the guide out in Western Alaska. Mr. 9mm.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
So
I'm not familiar with the Mr. 9mm guy. I remember the Kreptic guy.
So Phil Shoemaker is a famous bear guide out in Western Alaska.
Okay.
And he was just fishing with a couple of folks that were from, I think, Malaysia. And a brown bear jumped out at like 9 feet, and he emptied. He had a Smith & Wesson 9mm with buffalo bore in his pocket. And he dropped the bear, hitting it, what is it? Six times in about two, you know, just as fast as he could go. Just dumped the rounds in. So the whole movement towards, you know, tactical 9mm use kind of is based off of Phil. He's a good guy. He's got a house in Central. His son Taj works here in town.
Nice.
He's normally at the Palmer Gun Show. He writes a lot about, he has a rifle called Old Ugly, a 458 Winchester Mauser that, you know, he's pretty well known for being a bear guide.
Nice.
But they called Mr. 9mm because he reacted. It was what he had, and he dumped the bear. It was a 9-foot brown bear that was going to kill his fishing clients. And so he just used what he had on hand.
And probably him when it got done.
Yeah. anyhow, what I was going to call about is I had several customers asking about that. I think it's House Bill 38, the concealed carry reciprocity bill, that there would be one federal concealed carry bill, and I don't think that that's there. And so we're going to ask you, because on concealed carry laws, you probably are probably the expert.
And we're talking about from the federal level, House Bill 38?
Yeah. I don't think there's a single federal concealed carry bill proposed. I think everybody just still is going to go on state by state level.
Well, the reciprocity normally is handled at the state level, but they want to do the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, which is what H.R. 38 is referring to. I know we have talked about it on past shows,
yep.
and it's almost like dead in the water.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things that politicians throw out there and like, hey, reelect me because I'm going to, like,
election
try to get this
time.
Through. Yeah, every time around election time. So every four yep. years or 6 years, this thing comes up. But there's, like, absolutely nothing that is starting to come up with this thing.
Yeah, March 2025, it was referred to the House Judiciary yep. Committee and reported out of committee on the same March 25th, 2025. That's all the news we have for that one.
Next question, have you guys felt and handled and shot the Gen 6 Glocks?
Yes.
They are just fantastic.
I'm going to go out on a limb here because I'm kind of a Glock guy. But I got to tell you, I was not impressed with the trigger.
No.
Oh, so I it's just the grip, the ergonomics to the grip of, I think, the Model 45 is nice.
I don't disagree with the ergonomics of the grip. I know they put the gas pedal on the side. You know, that's all the rage now.
If you can even call it that, support. It's like a shelf.
Yeah, it's like a shelf for your support thumb if you're a lefty kind of guy. But I was not, you know, I've shot the performance Glock triggers.
Yeah.
And there's two variations of those. A lot of people don't know that. When Glock came out with their first performance trigger, it was a 3.5 pound. And it was not approved for law enforcement purposes because it didn't meet the 5 pound standard of the National Institute of Justice, right? And so they were like, well, okay, we'll come out with a 5 pound version. And that literally had the same like feel as the 3.5, just, you know, obviously a heavier break. I wish they had put that in the Glock, but here's the problem when they do that. The way that trigger is set up on the performance trigger is it's not necessarily drop safety like the Glock trigger that they have now. So the factory Glock trigger, hence the reason why you have that little bit of, I'm going to call it like a sloppy slack that's in that trigger. Now, and it almost feels like kind of like cushiony.
Yeah.
It's because of that trigger bar coming back and then dropping down, you know, under the connector and letting the sear go forward or the striker go forward. There's no way to fix that really and still maintain a drop safety without having to put a legitimate safety on the gun. But it still just feels kind of mushy to me, if that makes sense.
I like the pistol. I think they...
I love the barrels on them.
Yeah. I think Glock really outdid themselves with redesigning a lot of the stuff that people usually just go and do when they purchase a Glock. Just stippling, they, like you said, the gas pedal. I think they did the gas pedal wrong, but I understand why. Yeah, that trigger, it felt like there was... I couldn't feel that wall enough. I think that was one of my biggest gripes is like it was sponge. Plywood wall, and then, you know, it breaks. And that's what I didn't like about it. And the other thing, too, is just the lack of aftermarket support, again, as well. Every new gun that comes out, it's always going to have that at first. But Glock, you can still get everything clone made is for a Gen 3. Everything, you can find a bunch of Gen 4 stuff. There is a ton of Gen 5 stuff out there now. But Gen 6, it's just, it's going to probably take a year or two to get that traction. And for me, I can't justify that purchase until that support is there.
Now, I will tell you this. Let me go out on a secondary limb here. I did get Cindy an H&K VP9A1.
Mm-hmm.
I love the trigger in that thing.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know this yet, but I got her a plate so we could put a 509T Ooh. On it as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so hopefully.
Is that my Valentine gift? We don't celebrate Valentine's.
Yeah, well, it's my everyday I love you gift.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's kind of our thought on that. But
well, I'll let you guys go.
Hey, one last thing, though. Just so you know, that shooting bear with that amount of rounds is why I'm a huge advocate for high-capacity magazines.
Yep. It is safety.
So.
Well, and the thing is, he didn't have 115 grain full, you know,
sure.
Metal jacket rounds. He had the Buffalo Bore 158, you know, he had the good rounds in it. It's just that
sure.
he normally carries either a 357 or 44. But it was one case where he had a DLP, one with a 9, and I've heard about three others since then.
Sure.
You know, now what's going on is people are transitioning and building bullets that are penetrators, that are effective on animals, that are, you know, bears, and it's more about placement than it is about the size of the gun. We have so many people that buy just an awkward designed 10 millimeter, you know, and they think that they're prepared for, you know, bear interactions. They really need to think about, you know, going through one of your classes, just getting familiar with their firearm, and then learning how to practice to where they can do, survive in a defense type situation.
Absolutely. Because, and you're absolutely right, when your heart rate's 108 beats per minute and you got crap in your shorts, you're probably not going to be able to work that gun like you thought you were going to in your own mind because you haven't trained and developed those neuromuscular pathways. That's what we preach all the time. So there's that. But we got to go into our half-hour break here pretty soon, so I really appreciate the call. You have a great day, and you drive safe out there.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, hey,
thank you.
Sometime you guys need to have Dr. Brett Terbeek on. You know, he DLP'd a brown bear with his 10 Glock.
Nice. Well, we got to go into our mandatory break. We appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Shoot me an email or something with that name so I can look that guy up. We'll see if we can get him on the show.
Yep.
So we'll be right back after this mandatory break here at Shooter's Corner, KFAR 97.5, 660 AM. We'll be right back.
Broadcasting from the Satellite West KFAR studio. Communicate from anywhere in the world with Satellite
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. President Trump hosting the inaugural meeting of his Gaza Board of Peace in Washington, D.C. today with more than 40 countries having representatives in attendance. Vice President J.D. Vance also there praising some of his colleagues.
I think what this Board of Peace represents is a recognition that if you actually have a President of the United States and a team that's committed to diplomacy, it can actually work.
Looming over this meeting, of course, the threat of possible U.S. attack on Iran. We're hearing from witnesses who are at a hockey game in Pawtucket, Rhode Island Monday when a deadly shooting broke out. Police say the shooter, a 56-year-old, shot and killed his ex-wife and his adult son before this guy, Michael Black, tackled the shooter.
Eventually he fell to my feet, and we were staring right at each other. He had a very concerned look on his face and reached into his left pocket and pulled out another gun.
That's when he killed himself. His comments on the Fox News channel. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Anchorage Daily News reports Anchorage Mayor Suzanne LaFrance's administration wants to convert the vacant former Nordstrom department store building in downtown Anchorage into housing and commercial space. The Nordstrom property is a key symbolic and physical asset in Anchorage's downtown core, according to a public benefit statement filed by the Anchorage Community Development Authority, a quasi-governmental municipal corporation that is behind the redevelopment effort. By providing a mix of specialty retail and housing, the project will reactivate foot traffic and economic opportunity. Nordstrom closed in 2019 after 44 years at the location, where it occupied a place of reverence in the lives of many Alaskans as a fixture of outside finery and elegance. Since then, the structure has been empty. There's a lot of work that has to be done before we can put forward a real development plan, said Mike Robbins, director of ACDA, in an interview Monday. The city owns four of the five parcels at the site. The fifth is owned by a private entity that the city is working with, which will have to agree to final development
plans. Online at KFAR660.com.
It's remote start season at Auto Trim Design. With our variety of CompuStar remote starts available, we are sure to have an option to fit everyone's needs. Enjoy many features like smartphone control with drone mobile, two-way rechargeable remotes, proximity unlock, additional security alarm, and so much more. With over 30 years of experience, Auto Trim Design takes pride in being CompuStar's only pro dealer in the interior. Contact us today to set up your appointment to have your remote start professionally installed. Stay warm with Auto Trim Design this winter.
Customized by Auto Trim Design.
Hey, North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family-owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. Prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV in North Pole.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too, family owned and operated, keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here at the Shooter Corner studio here at Fairbanks, Alaska. All right, looks like we got another call.
We absolutely do. Caller, you should be on.
Hello?
Yes, hello. You're here with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here at Shooter's Corner. Go ahead.
What you got? Right on. Hey, I really appreciate your program. I listen to it every chance I get, and just sometimes I can't. But I was listening to your program a while back, and you were talking about the BAR.
Okay.
And John Browning Designs and whatnot. Well, my question is, John Browning also designed the FNFAL. Now, that was a select fire firearm, and it fired from a closed bolt position. Now, was it just because you could fire it semi-auto that that would work, whereas with the BAR, it was a full auto?
Are you talking about the talking with the BAR, using it as a support weapon? Are you talking about the? And I'm not trying to. I just want to be clear. You're talking about the infamous weapon of the right hand of the free world, the 7.62 by 51, used in the Rhodesian Brush Wars, used by every paramilitary.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of a misnomer. It looks like, based off of our research and knowledge, John Browning did not design the FNFAL.
Oh, I thought he did.
Yeah, it was actually designed by some Belgium dude that I can't pronounce. I'll try to pronounce it like a French without moving my jaw. It was Duet-Duet-Save.
I hope there's no French people listening. Yeah. Sorry for that.
Yeah. So he was a Belgian firearms designer.
Oh, you bet.
He was Browning's former assistant, however. So maybe he had some concepts or maybe some ideas, but John Browning's was not the designer of the FNFAL. So.
Oh, okay.
But going to your question of the design choice between an open bolt and a closed bolt, from my experience, open bolt has always had reliability issues, mainly because if you're moving it around, you're doing anything with it, moving in any environment that isn't an indoor shooting range, you're going to get debris in there. It's going to get dirty quicker. They do fire extremely fast. You're essentially slam firing it to a certain extent in layman's terms. With the closed bolt design, you have an immediate hammer on firing pin. You're initiating. It's a little bit quicker. But overall, I think it was just the design choice because everyone was doing closed bolt at that time for a non-automatic weapon or a non-support weapon. The FAL is a great weapon. I really wish I could find an original. Love shooting it. They are super cool, and it's an awesome weapon. I could not imagine trying to have it open bolt, as well as the fact that we can't even own open bolt firearms in the U.S. Thanks. I want to say that was Clinton's administration or Reagan that put a stop to that. But I think the key advantage is closed bolt. Again, my experience, and Chuck may disagree, you may disagree, is closed bolt has always been more reliable than open bolt for anything I have had to use.
I would say there's an exception to that, and that is if you're trying to maintain sustained fire, like on your FPF, your final protective fire, and you're like racking thousands of rounds out. You want to have an open bolt because it aids in the cooling. Yep. And, oh, by the way, you don't have a cook-off because the round's sitting inside the extremely hot chamber.
That's kind of where my question was going there.
Yeah. So I kind of grew up in the era of the M60 machine gun.
I am jealous.
As is the 1911 as well. Mine probably had a serial number from Vietnam War or maybe World War II or something like that. Because the thing would rattle when you picked it up from the arms room. But, yeah, anyway, so there's that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we got another caller. Woo, caller day.
Callers.
Everybody's like locked into their house because of the snow.
Yeah. Like, caller, you should be on.
Hello.
Sorry.
Oh, you're good. Go ahead. What's your question?
No. Thank you.
All right. Guess they're not there.
Butt dial. Who knows?
Maybe. Who knows? All right. So I thought that was interesting about that whole rocket ball thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that you discovered that they actually came up with a design maybe a SHOT Show recently. So,
yeah, I think it's, again, you hit it on the head with everyone's just reinventing the same thing or trying to improve upon or redesign it. But it's, I think that's a really cool idea. But again, I think with how many companies out there, how many ammo manufacturers are all using pretty much the same process, you would have to have an enormous amount of money to even get a factory going to publish it or put out a few boxes of that. All the R&D that has to go into that, all the engineers you're having to pay to get it to actually function the way you'd want it to. I could see it being used if they designed it to use a 30 cal projectile and lengthen it, maybe a 300 blackout replacement,
right?
Something like that, shooting subsonic.
Well, even like a 6.5 has enough space in there probably to where it could pull it off too. Who knows?
Yeah.
But here's something interesting, just to follow up on that real quick, and then we'll move on my editorial for the last of the show. But nonetheless, Hunt actually patented that rocket ball in 1848. And it was initially for his lever-action Volition repeating rifle. Technology was licensed to the Volcanic Repeating Arms Company, where it powered their repeating pistols, rifles in the 1850s. Despite its waterproof and self-contained nature, I think that was critical for that time for
that
them too,
cool,
especially
yeah.
for black powder, which was advanced for the era. The ammunition suffered from the low velocity residue buildup in the firearm and gas leakage, leading to its commercial failure by 1857 when Volcanic went insolvent. So, and then the design and patents were actually acquired by Winchester, so leading to improvements like rimfire cartridges. So it did lead to something.
Yeah.
As it always does. Somebody takes it and improves on it, but yeah. Paved the way for more reliable repeating firearms such as the Henry and Winchester lever action rifles. So pretty cool. But I don't want to get into my editorial quite yet because I'm going to talk about some of that stuff. But nonetheless, what else we got going on the horizon there, Mr. Matt?
You know, there's not... SHOT Show ended, so everyone's kind of slowed down. PSA coming out with some pretty cool stuff, as seen in SHOT Show. They've released a lot of videos on their website and their channels. A lot of the promises they made for SHOT Show 2025 have now come to fruition. They've got the PSA 2011. They've got their essentially Benelli M4 clone. The one thing I did see that was really cool, actually two things that came out really cool. PSA has their master key. So the
we're talking about Palmetto State Armory.
Yes. Okay. They have their master key that's going to be coming out. So their underbarrel shotgun.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. And then the other thing too is Strike Industries, which if you guys know anything about Strike, imagine a company that designed everything to be in a Starship Troopers movie and then just threw it on modern firearms. Always has this futuristic new age looking look. They are coming out with I want to say it's a 37 millimeter grenade launcher, but it's a 1-to-1 redesign of the HK M320. So what we're using now, or what the US Army is using now for a grenade launcher, but a complete redesign. And I think it's going to be sub $1,000 for that, which is pretty unheard of for any sort of projectile launcher of 37 millimeter size.
Which is not the military grade of 40 Mike Mike.
Yep.
Yeah. So another civilian.
Yeah.
Sector. All right, cool. Can we go into this last break?
Yeah, we can go into it right now.
I think that'd be super cool. We're going to go into our last break and stuff like that. And when we come back, I got some information about a new Senate bill coming out in Alaska real quick. And I want to talk about that. So we'll be right back here with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here at Shooter's Corner here at KFAR 97.5, 660 AM. Still kind of spitting snow, very slow. So please make sure you drive with your headlights on. We'd greatly appreciate it. And we'll be right back after this break.
Auto Trim Designs Tint and Paint Protection Film Department is now open. The professional installers are ready to keep your vehicles looking sharp and protected all year long. Auto Trim Designs self-healing PPF shields your paint from scratches and wear, helping your car stay flawless for years. And with their window films, it adds a stylish deep black color to your vehicle windows. It also provides protection from harmful UV rays, reduces glare, and increases privacy. From exterior protection to interior comfort, Auto Trim Design has you covered. Stop by today.
Ice fishing is great winter fun, if you're prepared. Now, before you make your fishing hole in the ice, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for everything you need to limit out. Rods to tackle, to ice tents, and ice augers. And Frontier Outfitters has the right winter clothing to keep you toasty warm and dry. Not to mention your license, guns, ammo, and a wide variety of snowshoes. Your next outdoor adventure is waiting for you. It begins at Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Hey, North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family-owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV in North Pole.
KFAR weather.
A winter storm warning continues until 7 a.m. Friday. Chance for snow tonight. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Lows dip down to about 2 above. Southwesterly winds around 5 miles per hour. 1 to 2 inches of snow tonight through tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck, Cindy, and Matt here at Shooter's Corner in the KFAR studios of Fairbanks. Matt, do we still have our caller on there?
Yes, we do. Caller, right. You should be on.
And they're not.
Callers, if you're trying to reach us, please.
We're incredibly busy today.
Can't cut in during the commercial break, but we can certainly get to you if you wait or call right back. So, yeah.
You'll just keep ringing. So. On Friday, February 13th, Senate Bill 243 was introduced and assigned to the Senate State Affairs Committee. So Senate Bill 243 removes suppressors from the controlled weapons list at the state level. This legislation is critical to ensuring the future changes in federal law do not prevent law-abiding Alaskans from possessing and utilizing suppressors to protect their hearing while hunting or exercising their Second Amendment rights. So that leads us right into this week's editorial with me. Folks, it's an exciting time for us in the shooting community. Across the nation, we're seeing a groundswell of support for common sense reforms. Oh, God. Oh, I hate that word sometimes. But, man, sometimes applicable. We all know that politicians don't exercise common sense. That recognizes suppressors not as some shadowy tool of intrigue, but as practical devices for safety and enjoyment. States are finally waking up to the fact that these so-called silencers deserve to be pulled off outdated prohibited list. Just look at the recent moves in Alaska and Georgia. This bill that's being supported by Scott Kawasaki and Gronk, I think, and some other people, or Kronk, literally mirror the Georgia rule.
Yeah.
They just probably grabbed it from them. But in recent moves in Alaska and Georgia, they're leading the charge in what I hope becomes a broader trend. Let's start with Alaska. On February 13, 2026, Senator Scott Kawasaki introduced Senate Bill 243, which aims to remove devices designed to muffle the report of a firearm from the state's definition of a prohibited weapon. This is a straightforward fix that aligns Alaska with a growing number of states acknowledging suppressors' legitimacy under federal guidelines. No more treating them like contraband. It's about time. Down in Georgia, the momentum is even fresher. On February 12, 2026, Senator Russ Goodman sponsored Senate Bill 499, which repeals the outright prohibition on possessing a silencer. This bill, along with a companion House Bill 1324, introduced shortly after, strips suppressors from the list of dangerous weapons while keeping enhanced penalties for their misuse and crimes intact. Georgia's lawmakers are sending a clear message. Law-abiding gun owners shouldn't be penalized for wanting safer shooting experiences. To appreciate why this matters, we need a quick dive into history. Suppressors were invented by Hiram Piercy Maxim around 1902. Originally marketed as a way to quiet firearms for polite target practice and hunting without disturbing the neighbors, but fast forward to the Great Depression era and things got complicated. Fears of poaching, desperate folks quietly taking game to feed their families, and sensationalized gangster stories led to their inclusion in the National Firearms Act of 1934. Suddenly, suppressors were lumped in with machine guns and sawed-off shotguns, slapped with a $200 tax stamp equivalent to about $4,000 today, and a mountain of red tape. This wasn't about safety. It was about control during tough times. For decades, many states piled on with their own bans, even as federal regs allowed ownership in most places. Today, suppressors are legal for civilians in 42 states, but that patchwork of state prohibitions has lingered like a bad habit until now. So how does ditching these state-level bans help the everyday armed citizen? Let's break it down. First and foremost, suppressors are hearing savers. A single unsuppressed shot, especially indoors, can cause permanent damage. Think tinnitus or worse. Suppressors knock down the noise by 20 to 35 decibels, making range time or home defense far less punishing on your ears. No more flinching from the blast. You stay focused, accurate, and aware of your surroundings. They also tame recoil, which means better control and follow-up shots, crucial for new shooters or anyone building skills without getting battered. For hunters, it's a game changer. Less spook for wildlife, quieter fields, no need to scare off the whole herd with one crack. And in a self-defense scenario, you're not left deaf and disoriented after protecting your family. Plus, there's neighbor-friendly, reducing noise pollution in rural and suburban spots where we practice. These state shifts aren't just wins for convenience. They're affirmations of our Second Amendment rights. Suppressors aren't for Hollywood assassins. They're tools for responsible ownership, promoting safety, health, and accessibility. And with a federal $200 tax stamp eliminated as of January 1st, 2026, under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, accessing these tools just got a whole lot easier. No more archaic fees standing in the way. As more states and Georgia step up, this is our corner, and it's getting brighter. Stay safe out there. What do you think, Matt?
I think, one, great read, great listen. But two, it is insane to me. Growing up, you think, especially high school, middle school, whatever, your frontal lobe hasn't even remotely developed where it needs to be. You think people are elected that are going to help, that are going to do the right thing. There's no one that can be doing these bad things. There's all these small things that you think of, and then all the big stuff that you see politicians doing when you're a kid, you think that's just a one-off. And then you realize it happens a lot more. And one of the other one of the things I always think about is someone told me years ago that the NFA is just a – it started out as a rich man's way to do things and not allowing – normal everyday people, middle and lower class, to have these sort of things. And when you look at it, $200 is not a lot for spending everything now. I swear, everything costs $50 to $80. You go to the grocery store and everything is $10.
Yeah, you can't get out of Fred Meyer's without an $80 bill.
No, it's like a car loan.
For milk.
Yeah. And it gets ridiculous. And then when you look at it, if they did, it has been proposed that they want to adjust the tax stamp payment of $200 with inflation to over – it's $4,300. Like, that is blindingly – yes, it is for rich people. Who can afford – my rifle, I've spent a lot of money putting it and getting it to where I want it to go. I think it barely goes over that $4,000 mark. I can't imagine getting my rifle and then wanting a suppressor, paying a grand for it, and then having to pay an additional rifle plus – everything
another
with
$4,000 tax.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that. And I know it's been brought up a lot, the Hearing Safe Act, but it is a real thing. Like, yeah, these are not Hollywood quiet. Even 300 blackout subsonic with the nicest, newest 300 blackout can, they're quiet. They're really quiet, but they're nowhere near what you're seeing in John Wick with an H&K and it has a comp, but it sounds like someone's dropping a pencil.
Right.
And these politicians, a lot of them just don't understand what they're even looking at. They get told, hey, our whole party doesn't like this, or someone's getting paid to do, you know, whatever. Whatever it is, whatever conspiracy you want to believe, sure. But they don't know what they're talking about.
Having said that, you'll hear some politicians be like, I got, you know, we don't want people running around out there with a 2,000 bullet clip.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, it's endless ammo. Like, okay, why don't you, like, go choke yourself?
What was it the representative, I can't remember which state she was from, just recently was talking about how Glocks, they don't want them to be able to convert them to semi-automatic, is what she said, because Glocks already shoot 1,200 rounds per minute.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Awesome. I would love to own one, except for that doesn't exist. And you're spewing this stuff out. You don't understand what you're talking about. And then there's people that just don't do research. They think what I'm seeing and what I'm reading, that's just the law. They don't do any research to it. And then they get mad for no reason. And I swear common sense just goes out the window and everyone just lobbies in the wrong direction.
Well, common sense is an oxymoron anyway.
It absolutely is. But a suppressor's whole point is to just reduce. That's all you're doing, reduce. And even
that's why I tell people, like, I don't like the word silencer. Silencer implies that it is incredibly quiet, like you said, like a pencil drop.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to hear anything.
Yeah.
That's not the truth. Even if you have a really good mechanic or a really, I mean, mechanical system, let's say in the gun, the action, right? And you put a silencer on it, you're still going to hear something.
You can hear a Nerf football like flying through the air. You don't think something that's going sub 1,000 feet per second is going to make some noise? Like, it's a little ridiculous. And the other thing, too, that really, my last thing that irks me with that is you take away the sound suppression, even if it was only 10 decibels, whatever.
Right.
It's flash mitigation as well. People don't understand that. You're redirecting your gases forward. You're sending it through this entire system. So I'm not just getting flash banged unless you go to Cushman and someone has a muzzle brake on a 308 short-barreled rifle. Yeah.
Which is a suck fest.
Yeah. And you have to shoot with your mouth open like you're laying a breaching charge because you're just getting concussively blasted with a dude shooting right over you. But it's not doing what people think it is. And I wish these people that were supposedly elected to be above us would just take 10 minutes to go to a police station or find, an HRT guy, talk to someone and be like, hey, is what I'm saying correct? And when they're told no, what do you do about it? Have someone explain these things to you so you understand it. Even if you still don't like it, at least you have a better understanding so you don't look like a complete moron when you're televised saying full auto AK-47-15 shooting 1,000 rounds per second. Like, it's so dumb. Let me get off my soapbox right there.
You know, one note on that. Hollywood does not help us at all.
No. I think they're getting better with it, though, now. A lot more shows and movies are a little more realistic with it. Suppression won't just be that super quiet stuff. But John Wick, big movies like that, really bad about it.
Yeah. Well, that's because it gets people to watch their shows.
So. Yeah. I'll still watch them. Oh, I love it, me too. I'm in a
gratuitous, like, killing.
Well, I love watching a Hollywood show and find somebody that's, like, all against handguns, but here you are.
Liam Neeson?
Neeson, yeah.
Yeah.
Staunch anti-Second Amendment.
Very.
And then still runs around with his finger on a trigger.
Yep.
I like pointing out everything they do.
Common sense gun handling there. Excuse me. Get a little froggy.
A little froggy this cold weather.
Yeah. Well, what else we got? That pretty much my plate for the day.
Well, what about, I think we need to talk about a little bit about, the halibut fishing. And.
Oh, well, no. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a different thing, but people need to pay attention that right now, I don't remember exact dates, but there was that the International Pacific Halibut Commission was trying to change the limits for subsistence fishing for the private citizen from 2 to 1.
Yes.
And that's because there's a huge lobby organization from the commercial side that's basically trying to limit that. So pay attention to that going on in the news. Make sure you're paying attention to the commercial tracking of purchases of firearms and ammunition. Yes. I know we've talked about that in the past shows. That bill is probably still trying to work its way through the Alaska legislature as well. You do not want the federal government to be able to start tracking your bank codes and stuff like that. Oh my God, they just bought 1,000 rounds of 9mm. They're a terrorist.
Also, your credit card companies do this.
They do that already.
There's some that do it. If you're going to research, you're going to put the time to figure out what car is the best for you, what kind of shoes you want to wear, all that, do it with everything.
Your credit cards.
Make sure whatever you're buying or getting enrolled into is in your best interest.
And I'm not a conspiracy theorist guy, but I will tell you that I firmly believe this. Like, it may not necessarily be the government, but there are private entities out there that are building a huge database on you.
Yeah.
And it can be just from your credit card purchases. Like, if we just went out of country right now, like, they know everywhere we went, everything that we purchased, all the way down to, like, did you get a Snickers bar and how many Snickers bars did you buy in a week? Oh, therefore, we'll sell that information to an health insurance company. Because then when you put in a claim for diabetes or something like that, oh, by the way, we're not going to cover that. Because, look, in your past, you did nothing but consume these sugary drinks and everything else, right?
Just like that new VA
bill. Like when people go and buy packs of cigarettes and they put it on a credit card. Trust me, that information is going to be sold to your health insurance company. You start buying guns, you start buying ammo, all of a sudden that information is going to start being sold. I think it's incredibly important that we as citizens, especially armed citizens, start paying attention to what our governments are doing, but not just them. They need to start paying attention to what private companies are doing as well and how they're tracking you, because they will sell that stuff to anybody. because that's what they're in the business of, making money for their shareholders. And I will jump off my soapbox off.
Yes, now. I got you
and
on
we'll
a
see
roll.
Everybody next Thursday as well here at Shooter's Corner here at KFAR 97.5, 660 AM. And thank you, callers, for calling in. You make our show even better. Stay safe out there. Drive with your headlights and brush off your taillights. Thank you.
You've been listening to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Price RV. Auto.